Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Hutchcroft, photographer, freelancer, and curious question asker. Join me for half an hour each week while I sit down with inspiring photographers and pick their brains about growing their business, authentically connecting to their clients, and being a good human in this changing industry. If you're ready to take your photography hobby to the next level and turn it into an actual business, you're in the right place. If you want to hear real-life advice from professional photographers and start building the future of your dreams, don't go anywhere. Here we go. Hello, and welcome back to the Unscripted Podcast. I'm so excited to have attorney and photographer Maggie Fisher here now, more than ever, because since the pandemic ruined all of our lives last year, there have been all sorts of new buzzwords and legal questions swirling around the creative industry. There's no fighting it. Our lives have been changed forever, and it's super important the photographers are clear so that they can be confident that their work and their business is protected. Like, did you know that if you're just starting out, you need a contract now more than ever? More on that in the podcast. Me and my very non-legal creative brain learned a lot during this chat with Maggie, and I hope you do too. To introduce Maggie, I should probably start by saying she's a pretty rare breed. To have her feet both firmly planted in the world of law and photography, she's taken both of her crafts and passions and launched two successful businesses. Neither one, by the way, is her side hustle. She's woven them both together so skillfully, but at one stage in the past, she thought that law would be the path that she'd take, and perhaps photography would be a bit of a side thing. When both things worked out and took off at the same time, she ended up being offered this dream position at a law firm and ended up turning it down to choose her own business. We're so glad she did, because she's here today sharing all of her wisdom with us. Let's dive in. One of the main surf towns on Australia's East Coast, and I understand you've got a bit of a connection to surfing, and that's kind of like part of your history. Can you tell us a little bit about how and what your background is?
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. I am a photographer and a lawyer, and my background started in the surf world. I used to surf used to photograph professional surfers. Surf a little bit. I longboard, but I don't surf like a professional. But I used to, not quite there yet.
Most of us don't. Think... that's an okay thing to do.
That's true. But yeah, so I used to photograph a lot of the professional female surfers in the surf industry when I started off in photography. I took a gap year in between college and law school. I went to West Africa for about 6 months, and I was working for the United Nations Development Program. And then I came back and I started photographing surfing in my local hometown of Ocean City, New Jersey. I started to work with a professional surfer here, and then I started traveling with her to surf competitions and contests, and I started to work with other female athletes. And from there, it really just took off. At the time, there weren't that many female photographers that were shooting in the water. And this was like 7 years ago now. So now there's so many incredible, like absolutely incredible surf photographers and water photographers. I had no concept of fear. I would just get into the water and shoot surfing. And I absolutely loved it. I got to do work for Billabong and Swatch and work with some really incredible surfers who I'm still good friends with to this day and who I love and adore, and just they blow my mind with how cool they are and like feminine, but so strong and powerful in the water. So that was kind of my step into photography. And then I came home to complete law school after shooting a bunch of like surfing events and traveling. And all of these local surfers wanted me to shoot their wedding. And I always think it's so funny because grooms are rarely involved, but I had a series of grooms who were like, no, we want her because she's a surf photographer. And the brides were like, oh, wow, like he cares about something with the wedding. Like we have to pick her. So that's kind of how that went. And then my first year of law school, I shot 30 weddings. So it just really was just a very quick trajectory.
Oh my gosh. I feel like as well with the high intensity of doing surf photography and swimming in massive waves and then coming back to law school, like there would have been like this kind of big shift, but I imagine you still kind of kept yourself on your toes shooting 30 weddings in your first year of law school. Yeah. That is insane.
I went part-time my first semester, which was one less class than like what was recommended or normal. They were really flexible with me, but it worked out. Like, and I loved doing both. And it's so funny looking back now, because I would constantly ask the career office and my professors, like, how do I merge the two together? Like, I'm a photographer, I'm a small business owner. Like, what should I do? What classes should I take? Where am I going to go in life? Like, what's going to happen to me?
Wait, so they weren't like, oh, we've got this photography law course that's actually perfect.
No, no, they didn't. Well, I got close with an intellectual property professor and took a lot of his classes. And I really loved taking copyright and trademark, but everybody looked at me like I had four eyes and they were like, I don't know. Good luck. Like now they see what I do and they're like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. Like you figured it out, but no one had the answers for me. And I think, you know, that's life too. Like you have to figure it out for yourself.
For sure. And I feel like, you know, with shooting weddings and then like creating legal templates, like that all feels a world away from surf photography, but there's a connective thread there. And I feel like finding the connective thread between law and photography, and it's just kind of, it's life. It's exactly like you said. Is there like a connective thread that might not be obvious to our listeners that you would want to talk about?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like both for me are super creative. I mean, the legal world and contracts might not feel creative, but I take an artistic approach to creating contracts, and the contract templates that I do create or do custom draft and the ones in my shop are very different than anything else I've ever seen or anything else that's out there on the market, just because of the way they're structured and formulated. I really want to know like the niche that the artist or creative is in. So for florists, like thinking through allergic reactions to flowers and like what happens if your refrigerated truck breaks down. And for hair and makeup artists, like can you turn away somebody with conjunctivitis or like a cold sore? Like so many little things. And it's really a creative thinking process when you're like thinking about all of these things and like how you're going to protect this creative individual. And I really enjoy that. And I think being a creative myself, I love connecting and working with other creatives. And I get so pumped to find solutions to things. Like, I feel like being a wedding photographer is similar. Like, I want to like solve problems. I want to like make the day really stress-free and like easeful and like a good experience. And the same thing with law. Like, I want people to not be so afraid to like think about their contracts or to approach the legal world. Like, I want to make that more calming and easeful. And that's the first time I've kind of tied that thread together. I didn't really think about that before, before right now, but I take
it's
a
so
very,
true.
Yeah, no, I think that's so good.
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that either. Like needing to put yourself in someone else's shoes and that requiring creativity, like that requiring imagination, that requiring you to sort of think outside the box.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. I feel like it also is like, it's putting the human element into the legal in a way that people can understand.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of brings me to my next point. I was wondering if you could share any examples of difficult or complicated law situations that some people like may run into, or if you have any examples, like anonymous examples of ways that contracts have saved you, your clients, or anyone you know.
So there's definitely so much we could talk about here with contracts. And I think that the biggest thing is seeing how many business owners aren't using contracts in their business. And the biggest challenge I feel like that I sometimes face, or uphill battle sometimes, is that people feel resistant to legal. It's like no one wants to go to the dentist. Like you only go when you have a cavity. And like same thing with legal. Like people feel more inclined to like contact their attorney once something's gone wrong, and more retroactively. The more that you can be proactive with your contracts, the better that you can get ahead of anything that could possibly go wrong. And with that said, like there's so many places to get contracts online. So the first thing that I always tell people to look for is to make sure that if you are purchasing a contract template, to make sure that it is actually coming from an attorney, because attorneys are held to a different ethical standard. They're going to make sure everything's super up to date. They're going to make sure everything's super legitimate in the contract. And I see people when they do go to buy a contract all the time, purchase from like creative marketplaces or from people in their industry who aren't necessarily attorneys. I have found that there are people who are using these contract templates and there's so much missing from them. So if you're going to purchase a contract template, definitely make sure it's coming from an attorney. There are a lot of creative shops, like legal shops out there where people have law times, like, you know, whatever the industry is. So there's options out there. And then just do your due diligence, ask around, ask people in your industry where they got their contract from, if they liked it, what their experience has been. I think that's just your own due diligence that you can do. If you're thinking about creating a contract on your own, you might need a custom contract. If you're running like a certain type of business that's very high level or unique or different, a contract template is going to save somebody so much energy and effort. If there's something that just automatically fits their business, they're not going to be paying for hours and hours of legal services. But if you need to custom create something, I would definitely do that with an attorney. And you could start by gathering a list of like everything that you would want in a contract and putting together documents for them to rely on, like proposals or like workflows and processes that you have in your business. So all of that can be built in there together.
For people who are like still just like photographing their family, friends, or friends of friends, like, do you think that at that stage people need a contract, or what stage in their business do you think is best for people to start having contracts sorted?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I find that those who are starting out are the most vulnerable to legal situations with clients because they are charging a lower rate. And at that lower rate, I feel like those clients are looking for a bargain and are looking for any way to like get their money back sometimes, like at that price point. And they're a little bit more nitpicky. So a lot of the times, like the legal issues I'm seeing are on that lower end budget spectrum. So I think it's really important, no matter what stage you're at in business, even if you're starting out, to have that contract in place to protect you and make sure that your retainers are non-refundable, that the time and effort that you're putting in are non-refundable, and to put that really good practice into place, even if you're only charging like $500 or $1,000 or something small for a wedding in comparison to what, you know, we start to see people charging like $10,000 and $15,000 for weddings. At any stage, even from the get-go, you want to make sure that you're setting out those expectations for the client and what they can expect from you, what you expect from them, those boundaries, and that legal protection for you and your business.
Even if you're not charging any money?
Well, if you're not charging any money, you have a lot less to lose, but you're still going to want to have some things in place, like a model release. That's kind of a non-negotiable. If you don't have a model release, you don't have any right to use somebody's photo and likeness on your website or in public without having a signed model release from them. So that is like an easy, super actionable thing that a photographer can put into place to just, even if they're not charging, doing maybe documentary photography or practicing and want to use these photos in the future, if they're doing it for trade or for free, whatever it might be, at least having a model release, which you can have on your phone on like a quick like signing app, just so you have that scenario covered.
I feel like there are so many potential red flags when you're just starting out, or potential ways that like you might slip up, especially as a new photographer. Like, have you ever worked with anyone as a client who's like maybe like lost some of the images, or during COVID, like not really known the difference between like a retainer or a deposit, or like, are there any kind of situations where people have just had bad contracts or not even any contracts and like they've not been able to protect themselves?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen a whole gamut of issues, especially post-COVID, where photographers think that their retainer is non-refundable and it maybe is not so clear in their contract. That's something that I've unfortunately seen a lot of. So I think being very clear about what is and what's not refundable is super important. And I think that it's completely valid to have something that's non-refundable because you are turning away their work and putting time and energy and resources into running your business that's going to fulfill this expectation of work that you've committed to. So that's something that is normally one of the first things that I look for to see, like, what's the cancellation and rescheduling policies? And with COVID, force majeure comes into play. Not so much anymore, but you know, a year, year and a half ago, that was a really important clause to look into.
I mean, I also think that like COVID, there's still so much that we don't know about and there's still so much changing. Yeah, so totally. Would you mind just talking a little bit about that word force majeure?
Yeah. So force majeure, I feel like, was thrown around so much over the last like year, year and a half. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about it, especially from the client end, because a lot of people will demand a refund and say like, oh, force majeure. But it doesn't really work like that. So force majeure is an unforeseeable circumstance that would prevent somebody from fulfilling their contract as it's written. So what that means is you're not relieved from your duties like forever under the contract. Typically, the way that it's written is you would pause. So say like your internet goes out because of a thunderstorm and like you're getting paid to host a webinar and you literally cannot, you wouldn't be at fault for breaching your contract because there was a thunderstorm, like an event that occurred that prevented you, an unforeseeable circumstance that prevented you from getting online and fulfilling your contract. And you would be expected to resume those services that you've been contracted for as soon as reasonably possible. So as soon as your internet came back on, you would start that webinar or like reschedule it for the next day, whatever it might be. Same kind of thing with photography. Something comes up that's delaying you, like a government restriction or a pandemic from preventing you from rendering services, you would reasonably presume them as soon as reasonably possible. And same on the client's end, like they maybe are pausing communications or like a payment that's owed, but then they would be expected to then pick back up where things left off and reschedule that event or figure out a different kind of way to continue working with you. It rarely in a circumstance where there was no way to continue the contract as it's written, it rarely would result in a refund or ending the agreement and the relationship. Back in May, June of last year, when everything hit, force majeure was applicable, but now new contracts that are being signed, rescheduling that was signed for all of these weddings, force majeure isn't totally applicable because it's not an unforeseeable event anymore that COVID or a pandemic could get in the way of their wedding. Like none of this, and arguably it wasn't unforeseeable. That's what some people say. Like, you know, it was never unforeseeable. Pandemics come every 100 years and like we were due for one or, you know, whatever they say. But yeah, like at this point, it's not unforeseeable. And I think a lot of people try to get out of their contracts by saying like, force majeure, COVID, I can't have my wedding, give me a full refund. And it just doesn't work like that anymore.
Wow. So the way that we've sort of adjusted since the pandemic is it to be able to work that into our contract. So it's not a force majeure anymore. It's something that we're just living with.
This podcast is brought to you by the Unscripted Posing app, the one-stop shop photography app for photographers looking to up their posing game, streamline their business, and look and feel like a professional. With Unscripted, you'll confidently rock every shoot, capture those emotion-filled images you've been craving, and create a fun photo shoot experience for everyone, including you. Join over 200,000 photographers and search Unscripted in your app store now.
How do you think that COVID, like have people sort of tightened up their legal contracts or have like you seen a lot of people like learn a lot of lessons the hard way in the past year?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of people learn lessons the hard way as far as like how to handle clients and how to handle their contracts and having that contract in place too.
Do you think that we're better equipped now?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so many business owners, like, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're a business owner, that means, you know, you're still here and you're still pursuing your business, which means you have gotten through a pandemic year and we're all more resilient and just better off for it now that we can proceed like with this strength and knowledge and everything that we've learned.
Yeah. And like back to kind of just living our lives. It was a tough year for sure, but I feel like it has revealed a lot of really important bits of knowledge and wisdom.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So I want to drill into a little bit more about why contracts are essential, like all of okay. the things. Obviously, they protect your business. And they protect you from being sued. They are also a way to sort of have a better relationship with your clients.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I agree with all of that. And I think that the biggest benefit, I mean, other than, of course, you're protecting your business, is that relationship aspect. And it's funny because I was nervous about how do I, you know, in the middle of COVID, year and a half ago, promote a legal business and talk about this while I also have brides and legal and clients on like the photography side of things. And so many of my clients actually came out and supported my legal business and said how much they appreciated how thorough and detailed my contract with them was, that they had no questions, nothing was ambiguous. They weren't unsure about working with me because everything was so clear in the contract that they knew where everything stood, like what I expected from them. They knew what to expect from me. And it was all so, so, so crystal clear in there. So I think we kind of get scared about presenting a long contract or a formal agreement with that relationship aspect. But I think it really helps to keep that relationship really healthy, especially if like you're hiring a friend or a family member. Having all of that stuff like in writing actually keeps your personal relationship separate and allows you to have like this very, very clear business relationship.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of like, it's a way to make your clients kind of feel cared for. And it's like a mm-hmm. sign that you're valuing the relationship.
Yeah, I love that too.
How often do you revise your contracts?
As far as like my client agreements, I revise them on an annual basis. I'll take a look back at them, see if there's anything that I need to update. Maybe turnaround times took a little bit longer, or maybe I need to change like, you know, an editing policy about like retouching because we've gotten so many requests about photoshopping tattoos out. So like maybe I'll add retouching does not include tattoos, like in our general service that we're contracting for, it would be like an additional fee.
I feel like that's such a big that's a really big ask. Like it's not that easy to Photoshop out a tattoo. No. I feel like people always have the sense that like Photoshop's this really magical, easy thing.
Yeah.
And it's like every photographer's pet peeve to hear the word just in Photoshop in the same sentence.
Yep. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So annually.
Yeah. Annually, I like to take a look back at our client agreements and then definitely our employee agreements as well. Just making sure that like our contractors all have a new agreement every year and make sure that everything's super up to date.
Have your personal contracts changed much since COVID?
So in the very, very beginning of COVID, I launched our online shop and everything got updated post-COVID. But since then, nothing's really updated. Like we update everything in like April, May, when everything was going down, like I jumped right on it. All of my photographer friends were asking for assistance and for me to look at things with them. So I did like a huge, huge, huge update then to make sure everything was super up to date. And from there, it's ridden the storm, if you will.
What are some must-have contract clauses?
Okay, so must-haves for photographers, certain things that, well, of course, you're general fees and services that you're providing, but things that I often see missing are clear travel fees, what they are, a travel warranty, so non-reimbursement, if like they have to reschedule for some reason, you already bought a flight or a hotel room, and what exactly the client is expected to cover. There is a provision in there on style, so that the client's acknowledging the type of work and they've examined the portfolio and they know exactly what kind of product they should be expecting with this photographer. Of course, editing, retouching, what's included, what's not included, so many things, all the way through rescheduling and cancellation and what happens if the photographer or the service provider isn't able to render services for any reason. Let me see, what else? Yeah, I think, I mean, there's so much.
Yeah, so totally. And I guess it's like, it wouldn't be in there unless it was a must-have contract clause. So it would be kind of hard to like narrow it all down. But I do love that. I feel like that's not something that I've thought of before, where you're expecting that your client has had a look at your portfolio and understands what they're getting to a certain extent, and they're not making any unrealistic demands. I feel like it just kind of goes back to that bit about why contracts are essential in the first place. Like, they're a guide to the relationship, and
they're
sort of something that helps both parties understand what they're signing up for. Would you say that there's a difference between starting a business as a creative or a non-creative?
No, I mean, not necessarily from the aspect of like starting, formally starting a business. Like, you have your LLC, and like for us, we would have an LLC. So you'd, you know, register your business with your government and then open a separate business bank account and then look into contracts and then trademarks and all of those things. So I don't think it's much different whether you're creative or not, but I do think that sometimes creatives think a lot less formally about their businesses, and they're like, oh, I'm just doing this creative thing or this artistic thing, and don't necessarily realize that like they're providing a professional service and they don't always give themselves that credit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I feel like I see that a lot. And there is that kind of left brain, right brain thing where as creatives, you're just like, it hurts my head to think about contracts. Like, I don't know how you have managed to have your feet firmly planted in both camps. That's really rare, and that's so impressive.
Oh, thank you.
What does a strong legal foundation do for your confidence and like creativity personally?
Yeah. So I think just knowing that I have everything on that end sorted, I'm just able to focus on the things that I am good at, which is serving my clients and my craft, and knowing that like the business side of things is all checked off. I'm not losing sleep at night, like worrying about anything else that I would probably have to worry about if I didn't have those things in place.
Yeah. It's kind of just like, you can sleep easy knowing that you're protected. And yeah, I feel like that's a kind of foundation that creativity thrives in.
Yeah.
It's kind of being able to just focus on that and not have to juggle a million things.
Yeah.
That you're not good at.
Totally.
How do you operate like a safe and legal business? Like, do you have any tips for how photographers can run businesses that are safe both physically and financially?
So as far as COVID goes, do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of in that realm, but also with like insurance and
Yeah. So, I mean, I think kind of what we just talked about too, like setting up your business to be legally sound and having all your business entity in place and your separate business bank account and running profit and expenses through that business bank account. But then of course, insurance and contracts and making sure like you are running your business as a legal business and not just this, like, I feel like you can kind of tell when it's no longer just like a side hobby. Like, you're not just baking cakes for your friends anymore. Like, you're selling lots and lots of cakes as wedding cakes or, you know, for big events. Like, you might want to make sure that it's a legal business and that it's set up properly. As far as being safe and sound, both physically and financially, I think it's really healthy to have a grasp on a big picture view of your business finance-wise and knowing what the cost of running your business is overall. So like, what are your yearly expenses? Like, what kinds of apps and software and things are crucial? Like your insurance and maybe your certain apps that you need or softwares, whatever it might be. And then what is your cost per job? Like, cost of each project. And knowing those things, you can figure out what your cost of running your business per hour is, which is super interesting to figure out based on like how many jobs you do per year. There's really cool calculators out there that will, like, they're just spreadsheets on the internet that you can find. We're working on putting one together for our shop. You can figure out like what your cost of running your business per hour is, and then figure out what you need to charge as an hourly rate by timesing that by three, because then one third is expense, one third is taxes. For us, taxes is about like 33%, and then one third is profit. I love that whole thing.
That is a game changer. That is amazing. I feel like there's so many freelancers out there, and I myself included, that when you're trying to think about how much to charge for a job, kind of just look around, maybe get sort of an average of what other people in the same industry are charging, and then you just kind of make it up.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how many people leave like such a big, it's basically the main component of their business. Like it's the point of having a business. And like that's something that most people just kind of leave up to chance. Like it's kind of just like make-believe. Like you're just like, yeah, I think this is how much I'm going to charge.
Yeah.
But the invoice gets accepted.
Yeah, totally, totally.
That is amazing. When is that happening? Like, is that like, I'm like, I need this. This is happening.
Yeah. Soon. I have it. I just like have to put it up in the shop, but I can send it to you.
No, no, I'm going to wait for it to come out in the shop. I'm excited for the launch. It's just going to be, it's going to be a really good day for me.
Oh yeah. No, it's super helpful when you start thinking about it that way.
It is. Have you always just thought of it that way? Or was there a moment where you kind of did the kind of calculator thing and you were like, oh, I haven't been charging the right thing? Or
yeah, I saw it somewhere and I've modified it like to how I do it personally for me over the years. But I saw the concept, or maybe I read it in a book about like cost of running your business, cost per project, you know, figuring out that whole like formula for it. Mm. And I put everything into numbers, and now that's what I use to like update all of our pricing. So for example, like we have a large associate team. We have about 12 photographers that work for us, and we're upping their rates for next year. So I started with that in our calculator to see like, okay, how much is it going to cost me? Not only like per team member that I'm paying, but like cost of running the business and cost per project, so that I could see like what kind of profit was left over, what my margins were. And I just like quick, like, you know, it took me like an hour and I played with numbers and I was like, I want my profit margins to be at a certain percentage and to know like that what I'm doing is worthwhile. And I could just plug those numbers in and it just like spit it out for me. And I felt really good about like updating our pricing pretty quickly and also being able to stand behind it when clients are like, hey, like, why is your pricing higher? Well, you know, we have like a direct cost and we do like run these numbers, and I don't give discounts now. And I think it really helps me stand behind that pricing and know like why I charge what I charge and feel really confident about it and know that if I'm not charging that, then like that's just eating away at my profit.
Yes, totally. I feel like I can totally understand why it would be important to be able to have those numbers so you can stand by them. Because it's easy to kind of, especially if you're just starting out and you're shooting for friends and friends of friends and someone's like, oh, do you want to do it for this much? And sometimes photography, especially if people don't really understand what goes into it. They're like, oh, okay, you can just show up and take some photos and that doesn't cost you anything. There's like the software, there's the equipment, there's the education, there's the insurance, there's the contracts. Like there are all these things that people just don't realize. Okay, so aside from this like amazing magical calculator, what other sorts of projects have you been busying yourself with these days? And like, what can we expect to see from you in the future?
Yeah, we're working on lots of new products for the shop, all kinds of things. So like a team manual and guides on trademarking your business and how to easily register your LLC, a DIY guide, lots of helpful like guides and tips. I'm working on a membership program. I'm still trying to figure that out, exactly how I'm going to run it. And it's not something I want to rush into because there are so many people out there with memberships right now. But I want a place where I can not charge a lot of money for people who need more help and have a 1 hour a week online session where I can answer questions and have questions submitted and have a resource library and all of that kind of stuff to just make legal a little bit more accessible and approachable.
I love that, because I think photographers do need to outsource to a certain extent, like unless they have a legal background, like they need to outsource to someone with a legal background to have these contracts and things available to them. But part of the problem with like outsourcing, this comes in with like accounting and stuff, is people just sort of like send it off and they're like, okay, cool, don't have to think about it anymore. And that's just not true. Anything that you're outsourcing, you still really need to be across and understand. And so having that sort of community building where you're answering questions and people are also hearing other people ask questions, so they're realizing that it's normal to have questions and it's okay to not know everything, I feel like is really, really important.
Yeah, definitely.
I love that. I can't wait to see that come to life.
Thank you. Thank you so much. If anybody needs any assistance with anything, they can always reach out. I'm at Maggie Fisher on Instagram, MAGIFISHER. And you can find the artist lawyer through there and everything else.
Amazing. Thank you so much for the chat today.
Yeah, thank you. This was so fun talking to you. And I can't wait to see more podcast episodes now.
That was so epic. You can just feel her intellect. Her brain works so fast. I think the key takeaway for me is that being organized and having a formal contract to send to your client doesn't mean that you're being impersonal. In fact, it's kind of like the opposite's true. Contracts are an amazing way to show your clients that you care about them, and people respond well to clarity. It's good to know where you stand. So, actionable steps for you guys today. Okay, if you don't have a contract, start looking into getting one. As you heard in the show, it's often people who are just starting out that are most likely to get stung by clients trying to get the most out of their dollar. I did not know this, but I am so glad I do now. Even if you're not getting paid yet, make sure you're sending your subjects a copyright or model release. We've got lawyer-approved contracts for just this in the Unscripted app. We also have social media and print releases and a general contract that covers your photography business, which would be perfect if you're just getting started. But if during this podcast you're like, oh, I really want to learn more about this, we strongly suggest checking out the guide Maggie wrote for us. It's in the Unscripted app. Just head to the Business and Marketing tab of the Education section, and it's called 5 Must-Have Contract Clauses. If you want personalized advice for the legal side of your business, you can also get a hold of Maggie directly. She has legal consultations at a very accessible price for either an hour or half an hour, and I'm sure you'll get as much or maybe even more from talking to her than I did. In her shop, she also has a COVID-19 specific waiver, a cancellation agreement, a rescheduling agreement, and heaps more. Don't forget to use a discount code UNSCRIPTED at checkout for 15% off. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time. This podcast was created on the unceded land of the Bundjalung people, and we pay our respects to elders past, emerging, and present.